Welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. So glad you're with us. Like usual, we have the usual guys here. Josh, Luke, Adam, we're all here. We're all, I think, this morning drinking coffee. It's a little chilly.
Yeah, we are all drinking coffee.
It's not going to be colder later today, but it's still a little bit chilly in the building. So we're all kind of holding the hot coffee, warming ourselves up. Yeah. How are you guys doing this week?
Doing well. Yeah.
All right. Anything to write home about? Any highlights from this past week?
I don't know that there's anything to write home about because nobody writes home anymore.
Anything to text mom
anything
about?
Anything to text mom about, Rhonda? Sure. So Tristan and I's second wedding anniversary was on Tuesday.
All right.
So November 14th.
Congrats.
Yeah, 2 years in. It's
And they awesome. Said it wouldn't last.
730 days.
I don't think anybody said that.
Yeah. 730
days.
And so I told Tristan, so we don't have a fenced-in backyard. And so every night before we go to bed, it is my responsibility to take the dog out to do his business on the leash. Mm-hmm. And so I just told her, I was like, we've been married for 2 years. I've been doing this like for over 700 days in a row.
Yeah.
Like 700 days, just taking the dog out. Like, man,
pretty close. So you guys are both probably too young to remember this. Do you remember Michael Jackson being married to Lisa Marie Presley?
No.
Okay, I didn't think
I don't remember much about Michael Jackson.
Okay, so that they said it wouldn't last as a joke because like it was like an MTV VMAs or something like that.
Yeah.
They'd been married like a year, and he came out on stage with her, and everybody's cheering, and it's like they've been married a year, and he says, and they said it wouldn't last, you know.
One whole year.
Yeah, then it lasted a few more months.
Yeah. That's funny.
But that's why every time somebody says how long they've been married, I just love throwing that in there. Nobody gets it, but I get it.
Yeah. Sometimes that's why you tell a joke. It's for yourself.
Yeah. I humor myself.
That's all of why I tell a joke. I don't tell a joke to affirm or encourage other people.
So I'm not as old as, you know, some parents, but my kids are old enough to roll their eyes now. So that's a joke.
Ah, nice.
It's when you tell a joke so bad.
My wife is old enough to roll her eyes too.
Yeah.
But it was fun. On Tuesday, we went to a nicer dinner together, Town 220 restaurant in Madison.
That's good stuff.
It is very, very good. I ordered wrong this time around. So this was the second time we'd been.
How did you order wrong? Did you use the wrong language? Or?
Yeah. I got the roasted pork chop. I got the roasted pork chop over some cabbage and red potatoes. It just wasn't my favorite. It was still good.
Pork chop.
Cabbage.
Yeah, I mean, but pork chops are good.
Pork chops are great if you do them right.
Pork chops are really good. Mm. I love a good pork chop.
It's one of my favorite things to grill, actually. Mm. Bone in.
They're fine.
Bone in pork chop.
I have
You learned your lesson.
I've learned my lesson. Everything that I've ever tasted from there is delicious other than what I had ordered.
At restaurants like that, I usually do some sort of fish because fish is just a little harder to make well. Yeah.
Their shrimp and grits are very good.
Yes.
Their chicken parm is really good.
Chicky parm.
Like that... The chicken parm is like,
we went,
very good.
What was this restaurant called? It was also in that area out there somewhere. I forget the name. Some Italian place. But I got like a barramundi, I think is what it's called, a fish.
Oh, the fish, yeah.
So good, yeah. Different restaurant. Adam, Jaden got in last night. So happy Thanksgiving. The family's together for a few days.
For a few days, yep. The daughter, we got her back from Joplin. Today's Thursday, so Wednesday night.
Got her back.
We got her back.
It's like Joplin is like... restrictive. It's like prison. She's back from Joplin.
Yeah. It's an 800-mile restrictive prison.
There you go.
So we're looking forward to Thanksgiving week and just being able to kind of chill for a bit.
Yeah, we are too. Our kids go a half day tomorrow and then they're out for the half day Friday and then all next week. And we have family coming in, so we're not going anywhere. It's going to be nice just to stay put. But that's not everyone's story. So, Luke, I think you're traveling, right?
Yeah, we are. We're hitting the road
and
driving all the way across to San Antonio.
Yeah.
Should be about 15 hours in the car or something like that. So, three stretches of five with some sort of break in the way.
So, you're only going to stop twice. And then when you arrive.
My preference would be that. I don't know that I don't know that everybody in the car would
We did that. We were able to do that one time. It was the most amazing road trip from Kansas to here. We stopped twice and then arrived at home.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's good to just knock it all out. I did on my San Antonio to Joplin stretch back in the college days. I had it down to one stop. and it was about a
12 hours,
10 and a half. If traffic was really bad, it was 12.
Right.
But without any traffic, it was probably about a 10 and a half. Mm-hmm. And I was like one stop.
Tell you what, that's back when your knees could take it, though.
That's true.
I mean, I'm not super old yet, but my knees are starting to feel a car ride over 5 hours.
I've given up on all of that. It's just stop whenever I want to.
I remember years ago, you were frustrated with your brother, Andy, because you took a road trip and he wanted to stop every 90 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Well, I had this Joplin to San Antonio, got it down to one stop. There was one summer that I did with the school. I did camp teams, and so we would travel as a team. So I had two girls and a guy on my team of four, and we were in a minivan, and we had to drive from Joplin to Austin, the north side of Austin, which the north side of Austin to San Antonio is 2 hours. So you're basically cutting my regular trip down by 2 hours, and it took us like significantly longer to go from Joplin to North Austin with them than it would for me to have just gone to San Antonio on my own. It was crazy.
So next week, when Thanksgiving week starts, and Luke, you'll be in San Antonio.
Yes.
When people tune in and they're actually listening to this right now, what do you think you'll be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said right here in this little text, Monday morning at 9 a.m.
9 a.m.
Okay.
What do you think you're doing Monday at 9?
I've already talked with my brother about this. It will be disc golf.
9 in the morning?
Monday morning.
Dew on the ground? Is there dew in San Antonio, or is it too hot for that?
There's no grass in San Antonio.
There's no grass. It'll just be mostly dirt.
So you just roll your discs on the asphalt?
No, because it wouldn't work like that. There's too bumpy, so it would get some twists and turns. But yeah, my brother Clark, he does ministry, children's ministry up in Kerrville, and he's got a ministry event Monday night that he has to prepare for. So if we're going to squeeze around a disc golf in on Monday, it's got to be the morning. So I know that we're playing disc golf on Monday morning.
Cool.
And then I might go play ball golf on Monday afternoon with my dad. And then we'll watch the Chiefs-Eagles game that evening.
Yeah, that's shaping up to be a pretty good one.
Yeah, just Monday alone. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's
a
lot more dates.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'll be welcoming my family arriving. They'll get in probably about that time. They're driving through the night. There's four adults, though, so they'll split up that travel. So, Adam, 9 a.m. Monday, what's your guess?
Probably in the office.
Right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good deal.
Making sure my turkey is de-thawing. Yeah. So, got to set that out.
Thawing.
Yeah. Thawing, de-thawing. It's the same thing. Back.
How are you doing your turkey?
I'll smoke it this year.
Smoke it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got to brine it and all those kind of fun things.
I'm gonna go ahead and bring this up. Okay. So, obviously, podcast, I'm known for some
really bad food
really bad food takes. So one of them in particular that came on really strong last year that was, I hate Thanksgiving food.
Right.
Okay. There might be some growth in my life here.
What?
Okay. I don't know that I hate Thanksgiving food, and I hope my family doesn't listen to this podcast.
We already know they don't.
I don't think it's as much as I hate Thanksgiving food as maybe my family just really stinks at making Thanksgiving food.
You've always got to hold that possibility out there.
Like the last couple of times that I've had Thanksgiving food out here in Georgia,
it's
done pretty well, man. It's enjoyable. Growing up,
Luke, I'm so proud of you. Wow.
So, of course, where am I going for Thanksgiving?
We should just wrap up the episode right now. This is a good day.
Get Miss Barber to send some, and Gerald to get some.
Yeah, I know. They do a really good turkey.
Well, those guys can cook, man.
Oh, my goodness. And on Monday, our small group had a little Thanksgiving dinner, and sweet potato stuff is changed forever because they always did the sweet potato stuff with the marshmallows.
That's
on
top. Not real, man.
See, but that's the thing is it gets too juicy and runny,
They probably are using canned yams.
Someone made it with pecans on top.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. My God. I've never seen that before. It was delicious.
Oh, my gosh.
So good.
What's so great about that is you get to have pie for dinner and then more pie for dessert.
Yes.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
Anyways.
I'm glad you're growing,
There's some growth there. Yeah.
Good job.
Yep. Now, I don't know about Waffle House. We'll see in a few years, but the Thanksgiving food is a thumbs up.
Waffle House is pretty consistent nationwide.
Yeah. Pecan waffle.
There you go.
Pecan waffle.
Oh, man. Searching is the sermon series we are still in. It's part four that we're in this week, and then we have one more next week before we start some Christmas stuff. This week was all about kind of these words, significance, mission. We've been searching for things like identity or belonging, but this week is about significance and mission. Adam, explain kind of the where we went this week and kind of the big ideas.
Yeah, this week is about that you were created for a mission, that we have all been assigned by God, a grand mission, and it's how do we step into that and how do we share our story, how do we share what we're learning, how do we extend the come and see invitation to people so that they can experience the same goodness that we have. And so we walk through just some, you know, kind of principles about mission and why it is significant. And then just kind of talk about how we can live it out. So hopefully helpful, and always trying to give just some practical actions that we can take. And so hope it gives us something to think on, chew on, and then most importantly, act on.
Yeah. So a few weeks ago, 2 weeks, I think it was, we talked about purpose. Mm-hmm. So how, just explain the difference. What is the difference between purpose and mission? Where are the two taking us?
So I think purpose is overarching. It is why am I here? And that is to bring glory to God. Mission is another part of the how do I bring glory to God?
What am I going to do? How am I
going to
do it?
How am I going to do it? And so I think that's how I would delineate between the two. I mean, it's all of this is the same. It's one coin with five or six different sides.
It's like a die.
Yeah. You know, to it. So maybe, yeah, maybe it's a dice or a die or something like that.
I love that you just got that right away. You're like, it's like a coin with five or six sides. Oh.
Like a die.
Like a die.
Yeah. Yeah, like that. But yeah, because it's all one big ball of yarn, mm-hmm. so to speak. And it's just kind of pulling out just some individual threads of how we do that.
Yeah. Luke, did you have a takeaway, big thing that jumped out to you from the message?
Yeah, I think that this conversation is just a really, every time it comes up, and just a really encouraging and incredible reminder for what it is that, like, when I wake up in the morning, this is the sermon that's like, okay, I'm waking up in the morning to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I'm trying to accomplish today. I'm going to honor God and glorify God by accomplishing the mission that He has called me to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And so I think it just every time this conversation comes up is a encouraging reminder. I think that the application, just talking about all the different ways to share, was really, really helpful.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about it on this podcast before, but for me, you know, with the way that I grew up kind of in the Christian church, never really missed a Sunday or anything like that, was homeschooled. And so primary source of community was people of God, which was a good thing. Bible college after that, and didn't really have any relationships in Bible college with people who didn't know Jesus or love Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then kind of moving out here and working at a church where all of our friends, all of our staff, they love and want to honor the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's always been really hard to like kind of draw the difference between, well, I also need to make sure that I'm a part of it, like the community, so that I can go out and do the sharing, right? Like sharing of my story and sharing of life lessons and sharing of invitations. And so that's been something that I've had to grow in over the last couple of years. And every time I hear it, it's like, yeah, I want to put myself in more of those environments so that outside of the context of the church and what I do for ministry and all that sort of stuff, I can also live on mission in relationships with people too.
Yeah. And that's just kind of living with eyes open. Mm-hmm. And looking what opportunities come your way, because I think all of us, our first gut reaction would be like, well, I don't have very many of those relationships, or I don't know how I would talk to someone.
Right.
But it's just kind of having that mindset of openness and saying, well, maybe it is that coworker, or maybe it is the person that brings me my groceries, you know, if you do a click list, or the checkout person if you go in.
I was reading an old book. It's from like, so it's 20 plus years old, because I think it came out in 99 or something like that. And but anyway, at that point, what they said was that the average Christian has 8.5 non-Christian contacts in their life.
That's higher than I thought.
Yeah.
Honestly.
And I don't know if it's higher now, lower now, or whatever. Yeah. Like I said, that's probably close to, that could be a 25-30-year-old statistic. I mean, really.
Yeah, sure.
I'd be interested to know what it is now.
Yeah, that does intrigue me.
Because you could convince me either way. that it's higher or lower.
Either way, yeah.
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 You know, that it's higher because there are fewer people who attend church and.
Yep.
Or you could convince
me. Or it's lower because we got less connected.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So you can convince me either way. Yeah. But yeah. But what they were saying, what the point of this one was, is that they were looking at Christians in growing churches and non-growing churches. Mm-hmm. And that it didn't matter if you were part of a growing church or a non-growing church, that you had the average attender had 8.5 non-Christian contacts in their life.
Yeah.
And what caused a church to be growing is that those people in the growing churches were leveraging those 8.5 contacts and the others weren't.
Yeah. So, the others were just inviting the half.
They were just inviting the half. Yes. Yeah.
No, I think you got to leverage that influence is what it comes down to, is the word.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
Yeah. So this message was about, you know, our mission, but we didn't jump into our mission immediately. You started, actually the first verses you read were from Luke 19. Jesus's mission statement, just pretty clear. Right. The Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost, Luke 19:10. Mm-hmm. That's Jesus's mission. And then you kind of said, well, our mission is his mission.
Yes.
So just add a little bit of I don't know that we have to explain much more there, but just why start there? Why is it important for us to remember that? Anything else to add?
I think that it's important twofold. One, because it is his mission, that means that we don't take credit. And so we don't get to boast and be like, look what we're doing. It's a reminder that this belongs to him.
Yeah. Because if you do that, Jesus says, you know, we'll come up to him. Hey, look at all the things that we did in your name and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And he's like, I don't even know who you are.
Right.
You know, because we made it about ourselves.
Yeah. And so I think that's the first part of it. And then the second part of it is just realizing that it is his mission that he has entrusted to us. And so the way it moves forward is through our efforts and our works. And so we just got to be cognizant of that at all times, of he entrusted his mission to us. So it's his, it belongs to him, so we don't take credit, but we have a lot of work to do. And so that's where we go.
Also in Luke, I forget the reference right now, but where Jesus sets his face, the Bible says, resolutely towards Jerusalem. Yeah. Like that was part of seeking and saving the lost, was getting to Jerusalem for the cross.
Yeah.
And just the reminder, Jesus, he had such a clear vision of what his mission was. Like it was a resolute, he set his face resolutely towards Jerusalem and marched, there, you know?
Yeah. I can't remember if it's the old King James version, but it's like set his face like flint.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Towards Jerusalem. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of bleeds into our mission. Mm-hmm. Obviously it's, you know, to seek and save the lost also. But Paul in 2 Corinthians 5 phrases it a little bit differently and maybe is helpful for us to hear it in those words. So Luke, a few verses here. I think, Adam, you said verse 18 and verse 20 in the message. Let's just read 19 in the middle as well, like 18, 19, 20, the whole set of three there.
Yeah. I'll read in the NLT, and here's the word of the Lord. And all of this is a gift from God, who brought us back to himself through Christ. And God has given us this task of reconciling people to him. For God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself, no longer counting people's sins against them. And he gave us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So we are Christ's ambassadors. God is making his appeal through us. We speak for Christ when we plead, come back to God.
Yeah, I love that. That's just kind of like what you said, Adam, a while ago. It's Jesus's mission that he has given to us. That was there in, I think, verse 19 or whatever. But one thing you also said was mission. It means sending.
Mm-hmm.
So the great commission at the end of Matthew has the word mission right there in it. And you pointed out there is one verb, go, and then the three participles, disciples is the
correct
verb. Yeah. Three participles. Go, baptize, and teach.
Yeah.
So then that got you to talk about our mission here at Corinth. Let's just remind everybody the three big words that we're all about. So
win, train, send. Win people to Christ, train them up as disciples, and send them out to make a difference.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And so we talk about that in next steps as well. Just start here and
commercial time. If you haven't been to Start Here, next steps, you need to be there.
In those environments, even if you've been at Corinth, it's a good reminder. This is what we're here for.
Yep.
We're not here just to get another little nugget of truth, although that's great. We're here to not just grow in our own discipleship, but be sent into our worlds and go find others. So what else would you add about just this section we're in, Adam, Jesus' mission, bleeding into our mission? I mean, one of the lines I really loved that you said was like bookends. Mm-hmm. These two statements frame a well-lived, mission-oriented life. Jesus completed the mission the Father had gave him. And those two statements he was referring to was at the age of 12. He said, I must be about my Father's business. Mm-hmm. And then 20 years later, dying on the cross, he said, it is finished. So just like a moment ago, he set his face resolutely.
Yeah.
Even from the age of 12, Jesus had a mission. So what else would you add to just to any of that? The text this week, as you've been wrestling with message, what thoughts have just kind of been coming back into your head, have been weighing on your heart as you want our congregation to hear?
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, I'll go a little bit of a different direction, but I keep going back to those three ways to make disciples of going, baptizing, and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you can't make a disciple by sitting still.
Okay.
There has to be action. And so that's important. An important reminder for me, and I think for all of us, is that there is action to it. Baptizing, just that, you know, public, visible way that, you know, it's like people are almost branded in a sense.
Yeah.
Sealed with the promise.
It's a brand. And so that's important. And then teaching, though, I think that's that one to where it's just the reminder of, like, this is how people are matured. And the phrase that Jesus uses is, you know, teaching everything that I commanded you. And I thought this was interesting. It didn't make its way into the sermon. But, you know, over Jesus's teaching, you can kind of break it down. 110 commands. He gave 110 commands. Summarized it all with, you know, Deuteronomy 6:5. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, strength. That one, okay? Love your neighbor as yourself. So you can see that even from the beginning with Jesus, it was about, whenever you try to summarize his commands, it's about relationship more than it is about rules.
Yeah.
But really, there are five categories that he has in his teaching.
Okay.
So one is about following Jesus. That's the bulk of it. Yep. This is what it means to follow me. This is what it means to follow me.
Take up your cross.
Mm-hmm. Two is that the phrase is religious piety.
Okay.
Okay. So example, like, because for the most part, it's like teaching us how to pray.
Sure.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
The third category is money.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that funny?
Yep.
I mean, it's just like, it's in Jesus's top five. Category four is how you treat others. Like love your enemies, mm-hmm. which is not just an emotional love, but like how well you treat them. Mm-hmm. And then five is actually about preaching and persecution.
Interesting.
So it's about sharing the good news regardless of the consequences. And so what's interesting is that the commands really don't revolve around right and wrong as much as they do compassion and how we treat other people.
Mm-hmm.
So part of our discipleship process is, as we're making disciples, is helping them to see that in the way of Jesus and following Jesus, the way we treat others is going to radically change.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was an interesting, I said it didn't make it into the sermon because not enough time for that. But
those are helpful, though. Really helpful categories to think through. Like if you're trying to frame a life mission statement to really be significant, where you're looking back, you know, you asked that question at the end of the sermon last week, what does it mean to finish well?
Yeah.
Those would be good, like five good bullet points to put and say, I want to be a person who has learned to share my faith. I want to be a person who has learned each year how to love my surrounding people better mm-hmm. than the year before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, and I think, too, whenever it comes down to our discipleship process, so if we're training people up,
mm-hmm.
If we're winning people to Christ, then we're training them up. before we send them out, it's like, here are probably the five big areas that we need to be focusing on mm-hmm. as a church, as individuals yep. of like, you know, how do you follow Jesus? That mm-hmm. seems pretty important,
yeah.
you know, in terms of discipleship. How do you handle your money? How do you, you know, teaching people how to pray, how to study the scripture, how do you treat others? And then how to share your story, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it just feels like if we are going to be on mission, those are probably five things that we should all have a decent grasp on as we're training people up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think too much of the time we, it's interesting. You talked about Jesus's teaching wasn't necessarily right and wrong and all this. Mm-hmm. It was more about compassion. How are you treating people? Mm-hmm. But we tend to fall back into that category of what we need to know is all the rules and right and wrong. And yeah. we just forget that mission.
Yeah.
And we kind of adopt someone else's mission or some other kind of mission, not even someone else's. We invent our own, you know?
Correct. Because I think that Jesus understood that what changes behavior isn't a list of right and wrongs. It's the change of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And that, so through loving him with everything that we have, behaviors are going to change mm-hmm. because we're going to start to go, oh my goodness, he did this for me. And oh, wow. You know, then I can give that up. I don't need that anymore. I've got right. him. He's sufficient.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So mission is very important for us to have, because if we wake up, and Luke, you mentioned this a while ago, we wake up and we have something to do. Like yeah. it's, we know that
yeah.
what our day is going to hold because we have a mission. It's not just nebulous. It's kind of, it's specific, you know,
right.
I'm going to do this specific thing, to win, train, and send. Adam, you gave some just reminders of why mission was important. We'll just talk through these briefly,
mm-hmm.
but, the first one you said is Jesus's mission.
Mm-hmm.
And we've already kind of talked about that, but let's
yeah.
talk a little bit more. In parentheses, I wrote, that means it's not a suggestion. It's mandatory. And we'll get to the flip side of the coin later, how it's a privilege. And so it's, yeah. you know, it's also a privilege, not just mandatory, but
right.
let's talk through that. Just it's Jesus's mission. He can't just be our savior without being our Lord.
Right. right.
So what are the thoughts jump into your head when you think about it's Jesus's mission that we have to have it if we're a Christian?
Yeah. I mean, with the Great Commission, it's not just for preachers, pastors, missionaries,
yeah.
Bible college professors, Sunday school teachers, and elders. Mm-hmm. It's all of us. We all share in that. And so if we wear the name of Christ, then we have been commissioned by Christ to go and do this. And
it's right in the word. It's co.
Yeah, it's co. And right. so it has been given to all of us. I think that's the big thing for me.
Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think the fact that it's all of us, I mean, I've heard an old quote before. It's like just kind of thinking through the, you know, what a Christian is. Like once you are baptized, once you come out of the waters of baptism, you really become a missionary, you know, mm-hmm. for whatever context, you know. And so it is a part of who you are now. It's a mission. But I also think that the fact that it's Jesus's mission proves that it's a really good idea.
Like I love that.
So,
yeah.
So this kind of goes back into our conversation last week about kind of the church and people having problems with the church or whatever, the people of uh-huh. God, all that sort of
sure.
stuff. Like, For people who would look at the church and be like, oh man, I don't know. Basically what you're saying to Jesus, to God is you had a really bad idea.
Yeah.
You created a really bad thing. And yeah. that's not true at all. This, like, God's plan for the world was to accomplish this mission through the people of God, through the church. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that we just have to remind ourselves and embrace the fact that, like, this is from God. So this is really good. And we should, like, right. really want to be a part of something like this. And so going all in something is going to be where you find energy as you wake up every single morning, knowing this is not only this is what I know that I get to do, but also this is, like, I know how I'm going to accomplish it because I'm connected to the people of God. Mm-hmm. And so it's super encouraging thing to remember. If it's Jesus' mission, then it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Second, it's important to remember mission is important because it has eternal significance. What do you think is one of the biggest hurdles of remembering eternity?
Of remembering eternity?
Remembering that we are eternal creatures, that our neighbors are eternal, that mm-hmm. what we're doing is eternal. Like, it seems like that's just a hard reality to wake up with every day. You wake up and you're like, all right, I got to make the coffee for this morning. What are we doing for dinner tonight? Oh, yeah, we're, you know, having chicken parm at Longhorn.
But I don't think they have chicken parm.
I don't know. They should.
They have some sort of chicken.
They should. They get the Parmesan chicken.
That's Parmesan, crusted chicken. Yeah. Tell you where the firecracker shrimp or the Wild West shrimp, I mean, the appetizer. I could just eat that for dinner.
Did you know you can get that grilled?
Wow.
It's actually really good.
I eat all the pepperoncinis with it, too, and it's good. So we're sidetracked because we're thinking about just dinner. That's my point.
I think that's what it is.
You just proved your point.
Yeah, so, I think that's what it is.
So what are the hurdles, and how can we get over them? What are some kind of practices maybe we could remember eternity for our neighbors, for us, for all of it?
So I'll use an old Mozart Christian College story. Don DeWelt, who the preaching lab is named after.
Named after, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the story is told, I guess I never heard him.
Me neither.
He'd already graduated to heaven by the time I got to school there. And his son, Chris, is, I think, still a professor there. I don't know if he's retired
he's
yet or not.
He's kind of part-time. He retired, still has influence.
Anyway, you know, somebody asked Don DeWell, it's like, how do you preach with so much passion every single time? And he said, I have a sign on my mirror. I think it was his mirror that I wake up and read to remind myself every morning. And it just says this, perhaps today.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, perhaps today is the day that the Lord is going to return. And so that's how he kept eternity in front of him.
Wow, that's good.
And it's just a continual reminder every single day. It could be today. Today could be the day that the Lord comes back. And so if everything we say that we believe, we really believe, then that should change the way that we approach each
day. You know, now that you say that, I remember that phrase floating around.
Yeah.
And so that's the genesis of it. That's pretty cool.
That is the genesis of it. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, it's not necessarily unique to him, but it's definitely unique to him in that regard. So.
Correct.
Yeah. Luke, anything else to offer?
I mean, yeah, I think it's tough for us just because we can't really understand eternity because we're faced with, you know, minutes and hours and days as we go along. And so it's hard for us to kind of let our minds wander outside of that, even just in imagination.
Yeah, and yet the scripture says eternity is written on our hearts.
Right, you know, and so, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just, I think that practical things like that are good ideas. And just to remember, like, what all of this is working towards is bigger than just this mm-hmm. moment right now. But the moment that I'm in right now impacts and influences what eternity is going to look like.
Well, let's play off this thought real quick, because this is another idea that did not make it into the sermon. So once again, lots of bonus material today. Just we're here to help.
Bonus content.
These are some of my favorite podcasts, actually.
So, Josh, it was your dad that first put this thought into my mind, and I'm still not 100% for sure. But he makes at least he used to. I don't know if he still believes it or not. But so anyway, The idea of Jesus says this, that the good news about God's kingdom will be preached in all the world to every nation, then the end will come.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
And so the idea that God is holding off the end of time until everyone has had a chance to hear. There's a lot of biblical truth to that idea. Yep. God is not slow in keeping his promise, but he is patient, not wanting anyone to perish, you know, those ideas. And what I loved about whenever your dad would share that is just the personal challenge of just like, hey, what if by being mission-minded, we could actually help usher in the second coming of Jesus? Yeah. It's not putting God in a headlock and all those other kind of things. That's not what we're saying. Right. But it's co-mission. If that is what God is waiting on, what if we could be the generation that did that?
So this is really important because what I see is in regards to second coming of Jesus, end times, all that sort of stuff. What I see from a lot of Christians is passivity.
Yes.
In that we just expect, for the world to end, everything's going to get really bad. It's going to get really evil. There's not really a lot of hope for the world and all that sort of stuff. And so we're just kind of waiting in no man's land until all of the evil happens. And then Jesus comes back and makes everything right. And I mean, fine, sure. But also what you're getting at, Adam, is huge. Like, yeah, sure, there's brokenness and evil in the world, but we do have the hope. We do have the answer for that. And so the faster and the quicker that we like take that out is going to be more advantageous for God's kingdom, whether or not it ushers Jesus's return, you know? So
yeah. And this is a little,
I think it's a call to action.
This is a little anecdotal at this point, but even you think Jeremiah back in the Old Testament, the people of God were told in their exile in Babylon, settle down, make houses, and work and live in such a way that the community around you thrives. So in every sense of the word, God, he said to them, like, make the world a better place.
Right.
Don't just hunker down in Babylon. And I think we are in Babylon, so to speak, now, the culture is just set against the priorities and principles of God. And so are we just going to hunker down, or are we going to enable it to thrive, not by its standards, but by God's?
Yeah.
Well, and I think this is another obstacle that we are facing. This is, I don't know if I would call this a hurdle. This is like almost a roadblock for us, is the millennial generation. 47% of millennial Christians, this is according to How to Revive Evangelism, a study by Barna, 47% of millennial Christians believe sharing their faith with others is wrong.
Wow.
Well, so this bleeds in. This is good because it bleeds into next week. I'll be up about truth, and just this tension of exactly what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Like if God really is true, and He gave us the Great Commission, and yet if we live in a society that says, "Well, you have your truth, and I have my truth," and you know, I don't want to be a bigot, and say I'm better than you. Like if there is no truth that is. I forget the guy's name, but he said we should basically passionately oppose any sort of meta-narrative, like this overarching story. Like there is no meta-narrative. There is no grand overarching truth. So, we're up against that hurdle.
Well, and here's what's fascinating. So 47% of them say it's wrong to share your faith.
Yeah.
94% of them think that the best thing that could ever happen to someone is for them to come to know Jesus.
Interesting.
So twice as many think the best thing that could ever happen to you is to know Jesus as your Savior. But 47%, half of them are like, but it's wrong for me to share that with someone. And it makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an old illustration, okay? But, I mean, it makes so much sense. If you had the cure to cancer and you had it, and if you knew that you could just tell people, hey, this is the cure to curing cancer, but you were like, I think it's morally wrong for me to share this with other people.
You jerk.
Yeah.
It is insanity. Insanity. But it goes back to, and this is why next week's message in Searching for Truth is going to be so important, because there is truth out there. There really, really is. Mm-hmm. And it is not hateful to share truth like that. So, it's just a crazy conversation that goes on along with that. One of the things that Rick Warren pointed out, going back to end time stuff, which I'm thinking. So here's bonus podcast material as well.
it's bonus.
This is bonus content
within the bonus.
Yes, bonus content within the bonus content is. I'm thinking one of our sermon series next year is just going to be called "It's the End of the World" with a question mark.
As we know it.
Yeah.
you know, because there's so much being talked about it right now. But one of the things that Rick Warren pointed out that I thought was just absolutely brilliant is, so in Acts chapter 1, whenever Jesus is giving the commission again, it starts off with the disciples asking, so is it now? So like, you're going to usher in the kingdom now? Is it now? And so Rick Warren did a great job. He pointed out that when the disciples wanted to talk about prophecy, Jesus switched the conversation to evangelism.
Yeah,
they wanted to talk about end times, and he's like, nope, it's time to go out and share.
So Ozark Christian College, Next Level, just released a new one of their little series with Shane Wood. It's called Simplifying Revelation.
Yeah.
And he's,
nobody should watch it, because there will probably be 90% of our sermon material will come from that.
It's really good. One of the
you already
things,
watched it?
I'm almost done with it. So I've binged it. Shane Wood was my favorite professor.
He was your professor crush.
Yeah, that's right. So One of the things
that, like him,
one of the things that he pointed out about prophecy,
yeah,
because he's talking about like if we want to approach the book of Revelation, we got to the phrase he uses is diffuse semantic bombs, like actually make sense of, yeah, of words, right, and language. And one of the words that he was talking about was prophecy. Mm-hmm. And he said, he pointed out that by his count, 17% of the time that the word prophecy or to prophesy or anything like that is in the Bible is talking about, like, it is some sort of prediction.
Right.
But the other 83% is just God trying to communicate who he is, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What he wants from us, and what his plan is, like, you know, like it's that. And so when it comes to like prophecy, it's like really just God is trying to reveal himself to us, not necessarily trying to predict what is going to happen and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. So it's just interesting. Really, really great stuff.
Well, yeah. Well, even Jesus said, you know, no one knows about that day or the hour, not even the angels nor in heaven, nor the Son.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Only the Father.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
There's wrap your mind around that one for the Trinity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, obviously, as we've gone on all these rabbit trails, God himself is eternal, and knowing about God is eternal, and yeah. There is something just ginormously big on, like, in our mission, like we have to go and do. And so often we wake up and all we think about is dinner today instead of perhaps today. Yeah. And I think that that's a good phrase to come back to, just perhaps today. And and we have to have a burden, like, mm-hmm. for our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard because I have neighbors that I literally never see them out of the house. Like, it's crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
How do you even survive? Like, do you have food in there? Is there an underground tunnel? Like,
Instacart, baby.
How do you get, like, what happens, you know?
DoorDash, Amazon.
And so we're not like the creeper neighbors that are waiting when they come out the door saying, hey, how are you? But just how do you live, you know, on mission? You got to think that way about your neighbors and friends and people at the coffee shop or grocery store, whatever. Eternal significance is definitely part of the mission, but we are so crowded with what's going to happen today. Maybe we should just slow down and take some quiet time and think about eternal things. So it's also a privilege. Mission is important. Mm-hmm. It's Jesus's mandatory charge, mm-hmm. but it's also a privilege. It's, in my mind, kind of like in marriage, like you have to say, I love you, but you right. also get to say, I love you, or right. prayer, like it's a have to, but a get to.
Right.
What else would you say about, well, in your sermon, you said it's a gift from God. That's 2 Corinthians 5:18. It's kind of what we already read, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a privilege that we get to work with him and represent him to others. So it's just an honor.
Which, once again, if we're slowing down to think about eternity, slowing down to think about, oh my goodness,
yeah. like
God who spoke the world into existence also said, hey, help.
Yeah.
And me?
I think
that's crazy.
I think I just think about anytime an invitation is extended to me, how grateful I am, right? Because so even just today, I was invited to speak at a chapel in January. And I'm, you know, thinking just like, oh, that is like, I'm honored to do that, mm-hmm. because what they've communicated is, hey, we trust you. Mm-hmm. And with the Great Commission, it's such a privilege. It's like God is saying, I am literally entrusting the message of the gospel to you.
Mm-hmm. Right?
What an honor and what a privilege. And the reason that you can wake up every morning with just some confidence in knowing this is what I'm going to do today is because there is incredible joy found in accomplishing this privilege of sharing the gospel. And so it's so cool.
Yeah. I remember this just popped back into my head. Luke, thanks. Years and years ago, it was one of the first CIY moves that I was on as a youth minister. And it was, I remember, you know, this line from a sermon. I forget even who preached it. But this guy over and over and over through the message to a group of high schoolers just kept on saying, God chose you to be him to your world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he said, and he didn't make a mistake.
Right.
God chose you to be him to your world, and he didn't make a mistake. And so that's true for all you listeners, all us around this table as well. It gives meaning is the fourth. So Jesus's mission, it has eternal significance. It's a privilege, and it gives meaning.
Yeah.
So kind of like a piggyback on top of purpose from a couple weeks ago. But it also just reminds us that what we're doing
It really matters.
It matters not just for eternity, but it matters today. You know, mm-hmm. It really does matter today.
Yeah.
So many, many ways to be on mission. So giving, mission trips, attending a great church, parenting, teaching, so much more. But the word that you focused on for application in the message was just the word share.
Yeah.
So we're going to share our story. We're going to share lessons, and we're going to share an invitation. Let's parse those out. Let's start with story. What does it mean to share our story, and how are we going to do it?
Yeah, we are just we are testifying to what God has done in our life, and so that's really what it comes down to. It's not having to have like some sort of slick presentation of, you know, and I'm not bashing on it because it's actually it can be helpful, but you don't have to have the Roman road memorized or any of these kind of things. It's just simply, what has God done in your life, and articulate that and be able to share that with them. And so try to give, you know, everybody just really simple things. You know, it's like who I was before, what made me realize I needed Christ, how I committed to Christ, and then how Jesus has changed my life. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, it's just a really simple just kind of way to do that and to be able to write those things down. You know, for people who grew up in the church the entire time, that's like they were born in the baptistry kind of thing. It's just think about who you would be without him. Mm-hmm. And you know yourself better than anybody else, and you know how ugly that could be. Mm-hmm. And so you can talk about that as well. But it's just being able to share that. You don't have to be a scholar. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that's great about this is it's really hard to argue with your personal experience.
Yeah. You said stories are disarming.
Yeah.
It's your story.
It's your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love this line. If you don't share your story, mm-hmm. it will be lost forever.
Yeah.
So share it. God made you to be him to your world, and he didn't make a mistake. And I love this line too. We are not attorneys, but witnesses. That's a good word. And it was funny, just a few days ago, I saw like this gospel tract, and it was totally bashing. It was like Christian bashing, because it was like, I forget exactly what it was saying, but if you don't believe this Bible verse, then you should believe this, but I forget exactly what. But it was totally like just arguing the minutia of what these things mean. And it wasn't being a witness. It was being an attorney.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're sitting there in the witness box, it is not your job to, you know, come up with a verdict or any of those other kind of things. You just simply tell, this is what I saw, and this is what I've experienced.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Luke, anything to add on just sharing your story?
Yeah, what I tell the teenagers a lot in the youth group is if you're going to share your story, you got to know your story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in today's world, you know, with again to bring up like the social media and the phone and all that sort of stuff, slowing down the development of the brain, I think that sometimes our memory is getting like worse and worse and worse. And so I think
our attention span is less than
a goldfish. I think our memory often gets clouded and all that sort of stuff. So in order to share your story, there's almost a part of it that you have to sit down and be intentional about remembering the story so that you're able to tell it. And sometimes that means taking a lot of time just to think through it. Maybe that means journaling. Maybe that means going to counseling to help kind of remember and rediscover, you know, all of these different things that have happened as a part of your story in your life. So I think that's just what I would say. If you want to share your story, you actually have to take the time to know your story and really embrace it too.
Yep.
Like embrace your story, because that's your story. It's you are who you are today because of what has happened as you've gone along.
And too, your story is so... I think this is the way to say it. It is so unique and so common
all at the same time
that you're able to help people that other people aren't able to help.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's why we do the baptism videos.
Yeah.
So often it's because people are inspired. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's unique in that it happened to you the way it happened to you, but there's a commonality that is there, that there are other people who have faced situations that are very similar to you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whether it's addiction, whether it's divorce, whether it's, you know, overcoming abuse or, you know, parental neglect or those kind of things. There are people out there that have experiencing that as well. And if you are on the other side or are coming through it, you are able to say, here's what Christ has done for me. And it gives them the inspiration or the hope that, mm-hmm. oh my goodness, that could happen for me as well.
Yeah.
In a way that maybe the three of us or other people, our stories aren't those things.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The resource, one of the resources we give in Next Steps is, it's not four questions. It's actually three, Adam.
Yeah.
It's just, I was ...
Yeah.
Then God
mm-hmm.
... Now I
yep.
... And it's actually a physical piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you take some time and write it out. Luke, you mentioned that as well, just writing out your story.
Mm-hmm.
And our next point actually talked about
yeah.
writing things down too. So let's jump to the second way you can, I guess, share. It's by sharing lessons of yes. life, sharing lessons of faith. And what was the number, 25 times or yes. no?
Yeah, 25 times. Yeah.
We are told to write things down like that in the scriptures. And so you just kind of gave this reminder like, hey, a pen and a paper is a great tool yeah. for you to have. So talk about that a little bit, Adam, where you've learned that, what's helpful about it. What else would you add?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just really, really simple. It is just, it's that reflectiveness of being able to spend time reflecting on what you are learning. And I do believe pen and paper or pen and tablet are just, as far as the motor skills go of it, very yeah. helpful. Now, I know some people that, like, they have to type. They just, and it's like, hey, that's fine. you know, if that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do. Don't just go, well, I don't like writing on pen and paper, so I'm just not going to do it. It's like, you got to figure out just the way to spend time thinking through and processing those things. Sometimes it's verbal processing, you know, Luke, you're right. You know, it's like sitting down with a counselor and those things.
Yeah.
I would still encourage having some way to have some sort of a written record of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're able to just look back on those things. And so you're able to just, you know, look back and say, so what have I learned from failure? What have I learned from, you know, not having enough money? Or what have I learned from pain, sorrow, loss? What have I learned through waiting or this illness, disappointment, broken relationships, healthy relationships, all those things? What have I learned? And, you know, because our effectiveness is rooted in our reflectiveness. And
mm-hmm.
and so that's just a great way for us to be able to think through. And if we're going to model, you know, or if we're going to promote the kind of living that reflects wholesome teaching, it's going to come from reflecting on what we've been taught by God.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so what I've noticed for me is writing also slows me down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So even this morning, I was just writing a short bit in a journal and writing a prayer, and it just was a reminder, hey, I could like think this prayer a whole lot faster.
Right.
I'm going to slow it down
yeah.
at this point. And that you don't have to do that every time.
No.
But sometimes it's just super helpful. So.
Yeah. Well, like I find for me, just in my reflective rhythm, that I have to, maybe too strong. I am not as effective if I have not slowed down and done some writing before I start my reading.
Okay, sure.
Because the act of like writing down, remembering what took place yesterday, writing down, you know, who and what I'm praying for, what I'm grateful for, it slows me down enough to where it's like, okay, now I can sit down and actually read. I can't remember the exact studies that it is, but it's like for us to get into a state of attention.
About 10 minutes, right?
It's about 5 to 10 minutes. Hmm. And any interruption can throw you out of that.
Yeah.
And so for me, the slowing down of, I'm going to take a few minutes here
mm-hmm.
To write and to scribble some things down
mm-hmm.
gets me into that place to where now I am ready to pay attention.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Anything else to add, Luke?
All of the things.
All of it?
All of the things. Very good.
The last final for this, I mean, you could go so many different ways.
Right.
But for this one was to share an invitation.
Yep.
So share a story, share lessons, but also share an invitation. It could be to a lot of different things, but we honed in on just the church invitation.
Yeah.
Adam, you hinted that Christmas Eve
it's coming, isn't it?
Is coming up, and that
is it the same time this year?
It's on Christmas Eve.
24th?
The 24th of Christmas.
Wow, every year. How do they do that?
It is a, quote, slam dunk.
Slam dunk.
Opportunity. It because is. Almost more than Easter, people come to Christmas Eve.
No, it is more.
Yeah.
So,
well, here's the way to phrase this. Your non-church friends are way more likely to come to a Christmas Eve service than they are an Easter service. What we find at Easter, what we see is it is mostly people who call Corinth home and who have connections to Corinth who are here. Mm-hmm. Christmas Eve, there are far more new faces than there are on Easter. There's been a massive shift in the culture.
Yeah. So Christmas Eve, the slam dunk invitation.
360.
Windmill.
Harlem Funk. Yeah. Man, I used to try to Harlem Funk. I would lower the rim so low. I try to do that with a miniature basketball, of course, because my hands are so small. Yep. But anyway, off topic. The invitation. It's not just Christmas Eve. I mean, it's on a weekly basis. That's also why we do things. I mean, just naming off just random things here, the candy palooza or barbecue or donuts or Mother's Day photo backdrops or all kinds of things. We try to have several invitations throughout the year where you can just give a line, hey, come to my church. We're having barbecue, things like that. So what else would you guys add on the invitation?
Yeah. I think you, to go back to the 8.5, right? Like if all of us have 8.5 or a little bit more, a little bit less, then you kind of got to hone in on those 8.5 a little bit because just calling someone up out of the blue that you haven't talked to in 3 years and saying, hey, come to my church.
Right.
That invitation is not going to get you anywhere. But doing life alongside of some of those people and not necessarily letting them be, of course, your inner circle if they're not people of faith, but like regularly intersecting your life with their life. Your invitation is going to be more well received than just a random phone call or anything like that. So I would say you have to make sure that you're in those circles with people.
That's true. I forget what stat it was or what the percentage is, but Adam, I think you've shared before how many people would come if they're just invited.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a higher percentage than you'd think.
Yeah. It's lower than it used to be post COVID.
Sure.
But it is still, it's right around half is what it is now.
Yeah.
I think one thing to be thinking through is just in terms of what are those triggers that help you extend the invitation. And so like, if you hear somebody say, you know, like, yeah, life just isn't going the way I thought it would go. That's kind of what they're talking about. If they say, hey, yeah, I'm new to the area. You know, there are just some triggers that if you hear people say those things and just like, man, well, if you found a church, you know, do you have a church? My church, you know, I think my church could help you. You know, with those kind of things. I think it's interesting, and I brought this up Sunday. How does Jesus begin his ministry? And he begins his ministry with three words.
Come and see.
Come and see.
Yeah.
He doesn't hold a conference in a, 120,000 seat stadium. You know, he doesn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
And he just says, come and see. It's before he's preached it. It's before he's preached a sermon, it's before he's performed any miracles.
Yeah.
All those things. And then what does Andrew pretty much just say to Peter?
His brother, come on.
He's like, hey, I think we found the Messiah, man. You know, you need to check this out. And what does Philip say to Nathaniel whenever Nathaniel is hyper skeptical? He's just like, come and see. And I think that there's just some simple power in just, hey, just come and see. Come and see what it's all about.
That's good. Bottom line was Jesus not only calls us to him, but to go for him.
Yeah.
So both are important. We can't really have one without the other balanced well, but that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
What are you challenging us with this week?
I think it's, there's no think. This is how it's written down, is to pray and share.
Okay.
And so it is to pray for the opportunity and then to share whenever it arises.
Cool.
And so if it's to share your story, if it's to share some lessons, if it's to share the invitation, it is just pray for the opportunity and then pray for the courage to actually step out and share.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, let's do that. And next week, we'll wrap up the searching series, talking about truth, how to find it, how our faith, how we can have confidence in this whole thing, Christianity and such. And then we'll start Christmas on December 3rd.
Yep. Wish list is the series. Christmas list.
Wish list.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Not wish book, but wish list.
Have you guys started? Not the wish book.
That's
what we used to call the Ozark Christian College directory because we would wish for girlfriends. That's what it used to be nicknamed.
Yep. Ours was online.
Yeah. We had a physical copy, man.
But
a physical copy.
Yeah. I remember not being a very mature person and just going through and being like, oh, she's kind of cute. Oh, she's kind of cute.
What dorm is she in?
Yeah.
Where's my guitar? I'm going to go out. I'm going to sit out there and play my guitar.
No, don't do that.
Cool. Also, just a reminder, with Thanksgiving next week, we will be with our respective families and such. And so we'll see you back in December.
We're dropping the bad news here at the end. No podcast next week.
No podcast next week.
Yeah.
So
have another slice of pie that is still not molded yet and enjoy that.
Yeah. Pecan.
Pecan.
Good pie.
Sweet potato.
Apple. I still like apple the best.
Apple you can do away with.
All right. Let's have a little bit of fun to wrap up today. I have 7 questions. We'll alternate back and forth. And it's a race to 4 points or else the most points. I don't know how it'll work. The most points will win. We're going to put things in.
Wow.
As per usual.
Most points will win.
Wow.
Well, there's a possibility you might not get it, like, is what I'm saying. So anyway.
Gotcha.
If you do tie 3-3, we'll have a tiebreaker. But
wonderful.
Yeah. You're going to.
So is this a race?
No. I'm just going to ask one of you at a time. You're going to put things in order. Okay, and each question will explain.
Is it the states?
The first one is about states, but it's not like that. So, Luke, you're youngest, so let's start with you.
Yes.
California, Georgia, Montana, and Oklahoma are 4 states.
This is correct.
Yes. List them in order of largest area to smallest area.
Like land surface?
Like square miles.
Square miles?
Yeah.
So you said California, Oklahoma.
Georgia, Montana, and Oklahoma.
Okay.
Those 4 states. List them from biggest to smallest square miles.
That's actually kind of hard. I think California, Montana, Georgia, Oklahoma.
Ooh, so close. But Georgia is the smallest.
Really? Georgia.
California, 158,000. Montana, 147,000.
Wow. Panhandle in Oklahoma, man.
That would have got me.
Yeah. Okay, so it's 0-0 still. Adam, your question is, put the following 4 Bruce Willis movies in order of theatrical release.
Oh, gosh.
From earliest to latest.
Earliest to latest. Okay.
All right. Armageddon, Die Hard, Hearts War, and The Sixth Sense.
Oh, wow. I think it's going to go Die Hard, Hearts War, Armageddon, Sixth Sense. I don't know what Hearts War is, though, so that might be number 1.
That's the one that messed you up, because you had Die Hard and Armageddon and then Sixth Sense and then Hearts War was 2002.
Okay, never heard of that movie before.
I never either. So, sorry, 0-0. All right, Luke, put the following 4 gifts in the 12 days of Christmas in order of quantity from the most to the least. So you're looking for highest quantity to the lowest quantity. So we have drummers drumming. We have golden rings, we have ladies dancing, and we have pipers piping. So biggest to smallest.
I absolutely hate this song. So I do not know.
This should be one of the easiest ones.
It should be one of the easiest ones for the average person. But bah humbug, this song stinks. Okay, so I know golden rings is 5. 9 ladies dancing. You said pipers piping?
Pipers and drummers, yeah.
Pipers. Okay, I think it goes pipers piping, ladies dancing, drummers drumming, golden rings.
No, 12 drummers drumming. They're the most.
Did you do 12, 10, 9, 5?
12, 11, 9, 5.
Oh, 11. So
11 pipers, 11. 9 ladies, and 5
so I
golden
got,
rings.
I knew it was 9 ladies dancing and 5 golden rings, and I knew pipers piping was up there, but I did not know drummers drumming.
All right.
I know. I am not listening to that song at all.
All right. It. Adam, put the following 4 NFL league or NFL franchises in order of their first Super Bowl victory from the earliest to the latest.
You got this one.
Maybe.
Chicago Bears, Dallas Cowboys, Denver Broncos, and Pittsburgh Steelers. So the first Super Bowl victory.
That's first
time
blurs in the 90s. That's tough.
So say those teams again.
All right, so we got the Bears, the Cowboys, Broncos, and Steelers. Their first Super Bowl victory.
So I can tell the last two are Bears-Broncos. That the problem is the Cowboys-Steelers, and I'm gonna go Steelers first, Cowboys second.
Mm. Cowboys won in 72, Steelers won in 75.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And then it was Bears-Broncos?
Yeah.
It was 85, 97.
85, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess the 85 season in 86.
But, sure, right.
All right. Wow, these are a little harder than I suspected.
What's my next one?
Did you take Greek?
One semester.
This is going to be a fun question then.
Okay. Alphabet?
Put the following four letters in the Greek alphabet in order from alpha, like starting in alpha, so that's A, to omega last. Uh-huh. So iota, phi, xi, and zeta.
Oh, okay. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Okay, say the ones again.
Iota, phi, xi, and zeta. So
oh my gosh. I don't, theta, eta, zeta, iota.
That's the song you're singing. I love
it. So I had to, this was freshman year of Bible college is when I took Greek. Mm-hmm. So we're talking like 7-8 years ago now.
Yeah.
And I remember looking up on YouTube a rap.
Memory song.
It was
a
rap to help with the Greek alphabet, and it is not helping me in this moment. So I'm going to go, say them one more time.
All right. This is, Iota, phi, xi, and zeta.
Okay, I'm going to go zeta, iota, xi, phi.
Hey, you got a point on the board.
There we go.
There you go.
Good job, dude.
Nice.
You want to just end there and have Luke be the winner?
Luke is the winner.
Because I don't think there's any way you're getting the next question, Adam, which would be put the following four planets in order of length of day.
No.
Of length of day?
Good grief.
Not just in order?
No. Or put the following four toys or games in order of creation. So the Erector Set, the Etch-a-Sketch, Monopoly, and Mr. Potato.
Oh, my goodness.
I can stop the count. I can see. Yeah.
There we go.
All right.
I'm making
Happy Thanksgiving.
A Chad Ragsdale.
There you go.
Did I make you proud? Did I make you proud?
You won the game with
Greek alphabet.
1 point. Way to hang in there. All right. I will pick a different game next time. Those were a lot harder than I just got some things. I didn't look at them closely.
That's okay.
It was
good.
It was fun.
I won.
The NFL was fun, I thought. The states were fun. I mean, we knew those. Those made sense, at least. Piper's Pipe. It was fun to see you, have a hard reaction about Christmas songs again. So.
Yeah. No growth there. Thanksgiving food. Thumbs coming up on that one.
There we go.
Christmas songs. Still no thanks.
All right. Well, good discussion. Lots of bonus content today, which was super fun. Reminder, next week, enjoy Thanksgiving. We will be back with you in December. Hope to see you next week for the conclusion of Searching. And then the following week in person and back on the podcast for Wishlist. And man, happy Thanksgiving. And we love you. We like you. Have a great week.